Welcome to the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers, the editor behind the scenes at the Choice Literacy site. I love our community because we advocate for every teacher as an expert professional in the classroom. We believe students should have a choice and voice in what they read and write. Our podcast highlights the weekly newsletter, including a full article on a timely topic. You'll find the best tools and latest ideas, plus get to know our contributors who are just as funny and smart as you. Most importantly, keep your soul aloft as you empower student choice and voice in your corner of the world. This week's lead essay tells the story of how I first learned to assess writers. A blessing and a curse. Early in my career, I had the opportunity to study with Carl Anderson for 15 days over the course of one school year. At the time, it felt like a cool opportunity, but now I see the way it gave me deep and well-nourished roots as an educator. In the foreword of How's It Going, Carl's first book, and one I consider part of the canon of professional books for workshop teachers, Lucy Calkins describes working with Carl as sprinkling Miracle-Gro on educators. This was true for me. One of the things Carl often said was, "When I'm around writers, I'm assessing them. I can't help myself." He warned that it is a blessing and a curse. Once you begin to notice the writerly moves students are making, it is natural to also identify what they are almost doing as writers. Carl made us laugh when he explained the trouble it caused when his young daughter simply wanted affirmation on her stories, rather than a teaching point. I decided I wanted to be like this too. Returning to my classroom after the session with Carl, I keenly observed what students were doing as writers. I was strict with myself in naming their behaviors. I didn't care to use technical terms. I simply wanted to notice writerly moves. To me, this is the place all teachers of writers ought to begin, by noticing the writerly moves their students make. It doesn't matter how inexperienced a child is as a writer. When given the invitation to make a book, write a story, or teach how to do something, nearly everyone can write. It may not be conventional, but something fills the page. Some students may create lines of loops at the top of a page, or string random letters along the bottom. Some may create people with arms and legs coming out of heads. Some may not capitalize proper nouns. Some may forget paragraphs. Some may include only dialogue in a story or forget to use sequential order in a how-to essay. As I learned from Carl, none of this is an indicator that students lack the ability to write. On the contrary, for all of these scenarios, I can name what the student knows as a writer. The lines of loops or strings of letters are evidence that the writer knows words are important to writing. Egghead people indicate the writer knows action and characters are important to stories. Proper nouns that are not capitalized are evidence that the writer knows to use specific names. Forgotten paragraphs show the writer knows to write more than one part of the story or essay. Non-sequential order shows the writer knows to include more than one step. I've trained myself to notice writerly things whenever I'm around writers. I'm hard-pressed to read anything, even a published novel, without identifying the writerly moves. It is a blessing and a curse. As soon as I name what kids are doing as writers, I can also name what they are almost doing, or what they need as writers. The writer who strings random letters needs to learn letter sound correlation. The writer who forgets paragraphs needs to learn to break their writing into smaller portions for the reader in the form of paragraphs. The writer with a disordered essay needs to learn to reread for order. If you take the time to keenly observe writers in action, you will discover that almost everyone has the ability to write. You will also discover many approximations kids make as writers. Be warned, it is a blessing and a curse. Our articles and videos feature full-time teachers and literacy leaders who spend every day in classrooms. Classic classroom content is updated continuously with 4 to 6 new features published each week. This week's theme is assessing writers. In assessing students online, small and powerful moves, Tammy Mulligan shares small and mighty moves when assessing students online. Recently, Tammy returned to the classroom and her writing is incredible. It is a must read and so helpful. Looking at student writing and deciding what to teach can be overwhelming. In troubleshooting difficulties when writing a big idea in memoir, Kate Mills and Tara Barnett pinpoint common issues in 6th grade memoir. They share teaching points and student writing samples before and after revision. Make sure to check out this article if you teach a memoir unit because it is so useful. In this week's video, Katrina Edwards helps 1st grader Brooklyn order and stretch out her writing with a beginning, middle, and end. She uses long pages and scissors as tools. In an encore video, Melanie Meehan uses a conferring card in her writing conference with Kara to ensure she has a record of the strengths and revision possibilities they discussed. Our contributors are listening and looking hard for those spontaneous, teachable moments when they can move a child forward as a reader and writer. Each week, we offer free articles to empower all educators to do the same. Stella Villalba teaches young writers about writer's craft. So how come evidence of learning from the mini lessons isn't showing up when she confers with her students? In her article, Out of Sight, Out of Mind, Accountability for Young Writers, Stella decides to develop a plan to help students link craft lessons with their writing. On the Cult of Pedagogy website, Mark Wise gives 5 suggestions for repairing rubrics that aren't working well. Joanne Emery writes poignantly about the struggle of a young child with an on-demand writing assessment. Her poem and narrative are thought-provoking and an inspiring guide for assessing writers in a personal way. Joanne is an ELA coordinator in New Jersey. Katrina Edwards deals with a frustrated writer on the verge of tears in her 1st grade classroom. She realizes the element that is missing in her workshop is joy. I'm sure you'll be able to relate to Katrina's article. Joy by Katrina Edwards. The mini lesson ended, and 23 first graders launched into their stories, a flurry of paper and possibilities, as one sat paralyzed on his carpet square. Shoulders hunched, face flushed, head resting heavily in one hand, Will refused to look at me. He shoved away the blank papers I had placed next to him. I leaned in to whisper, "Can I help you begin?" And his head retreated into his hoodie, arms wrapped around his knees as little sobs escaped. My arm reached around his shoulder and he rolled over to curl into a ball as he said, "I don't want to write anything." It is excruciating to feel stuck in a lousy writing day when inspiration never comes and the well runs dry. For Will, this had become a pattern for days on end. And often, even when he did walk off to his writing spot to begin, his head went down onto the page as he waited and wished that writing would end. After weeks of offering ways to engage in writing and failing him over and over, I sat down with Will to make a list of what was getting in his way. Will said, "I don't know what to write. I don't want to write that kind of writing. I don't have any ideas important enough to write. My writing is too hard to read." I thought about what I do when the words seem impossible to find, and I grabbed a small journal to offer him. When writers feel stuck, they stop worrying about which words they are writing or what kind of writing they need to do, and they let whatever is in their head pour out into a puddle of words on the page. Will's eyes brightened a little. "Really? Anything?" "Yep, anything." Within seconds, he was off, word after word tumbling onto the page. 20 minutes later, he didn't want to stop. "I already have 6 pages. That's the most I have ever written." At the end of the week, he was on page 52. It was a victory. For this week, he was writing. Now, how to sustain it? I have no idea why it took me weeks to figure out that I needed to drop the genre to get out of this writer's way. My teaching was making him miserable, and frankly, it was making me a grump too. We had been moving from genre to genre all spring as I dutifully followed the calendar of the new workshop curriculum we were using. I was reading and assessing student writing regularly, and too often entering conferences and small groups with my own agenda of what was next for these writers. It was sucking the joy right out of the room. So when I saw Ralph Fletcher's book, Joy Write, my hands could not grab it fast enough. In the article, Katrina shares the influence that Joy Write had on her writing workshop. She met with a colleague and they began imagining and planning for more choice in writing workshop. Closing the article, Katrina returns to the story of her student, Will. She writes, "I saw Will reflected in Ralph's words when he wrote, 'Many students find today's writing workshop too narrow and constricting for them to generate any enthusiasm for writing. Instead of giving reluctant writers more structure, let's give them more freedom.' To sustain Will's engagement, I needed to protect his freedom. I need to stay out of the way, keep my agenda and strategies to myself, and listen to the students. If I want to support Will's engagement, the goal should be to develop agency and his genuine love of writing above everything else. When we get stuck again, I want to remember that it is freedom, choice, and joy that will bring writers back to the pleasure of writing every time." Our Leaders Lounge is dedicated to literacy coaches and school leaders. Our contributors share their best advice for working one-on-one with teachers in coaching cycles, hosting professional development sessions, and designing demonstration lessons and study groups. Our literacy leader members will find 2 to 4 new features each week. This week in Hidden Gems, 5 Ways to Keep Your Positive Vibes, Heather Fisher encourages school leaders to be mindful in noticing when their positivity is fading. She offers 5 practical ways to restore it. She gives a look back at her first year as a coach and compares it to today. Then she offers a practical suggestion for application in your own life. Check out the first Hidden Gem, inspirational and informative podcast, Flashback to Coaching Year 1. Heather writes, "I spent most of my lengthy commutes listening to the same playlists of songs over and over again. Sure, I did spend a lot of time reflecting on the day that had passed and wondering how I could make sense of the ideas moving forward. Yet, by the time I got home, a part of me was still dwelling on what could have been from that day. In addition, I found myself becoming overwhelmed with trying to keep up with all the latest research and innovative ideas. The here and now. I fill my afternoon commutes with podcasts, listening to others as they engage in reflective practice and share up-to-date research on how to enhance our instructional practices gives me just what I need to close out the day of learning, reflecting on what has been and entering a new day of exploration with them. My commutes are now home to the infamous time I was seeking to build my confidence and grow my own professional practice through research and mentors. Consider this. We all have a commute. Whether it's a 5-minute drive or a 45-minute trek, consider using this time as an inspirational information boost. Remember, think smarter, not harder, about your time. You'll find other hidden gems when you read Heather's article. In Measure for Measure, David Pittman thinks through what really matters and nourishes him, as well as the teacher he serves, when it comes to assessing his impact as a literacy coach. In a Coaching Minute, Heather Rader shares a quick video tip about the importance of closing rituals at the end of the coaching day. Since this theme is about assessing writers, we share the NCTE position statement on writing assessment. It offers 5 principles to ensure valid, fair, and appropriate assessment practices. It's a great document for school leaders to know. Choice Literacy is a proudly independent community. We are not associated with any commercial publisher. We don't recommend packaged or scripted programs. Our contributors write for educators just like themselves, who are figuring things out by listening to students and reflecting on each day. Thanks for joining me for the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers, the editor of the Choice Literacy site. Next week's theme is digital reading. You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes, or sign up for the Big Fresh newsletter so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep offering choice and voice to students in what they read and write, and don't forget to keep your soul aloft. Shine on, everyone.